All right, welcome in everyone to the deep dive. We're diving into a super interesting case today. Mendel v. Carroll. You know, this 1994 Delaware case, it's one of those that really gets to the heart of boardroom drama, controlling shareholders, and, you know, all those fiduciary duties we always hear about in corporate law.
Yeah, I mean, particularly for our listeners who are really getting into the thick of corporate law, this case is like a masterclass in how those duties actually work when you've got, you know, a powerful shareholder or a whole group of them kind of running the show. It's a real landmark for understanding board responsibilities.
Totally. And for all you law students out there, this isn't just some like dusty old case, you know, it has real teeth. Like Mendel v. Carroll, it has huge implications even today for the way M&A deals are structured, especially when you're talking about companies where ownership isn't super spread out. I mean, it helps draw those bright lines for boards. When do you got to go all out to get the best price for every single shareholder, you know, even those with tiny holdings? And when do you have to step back and say, okay, this controlling shareholder, they've got legitimate power here, got to respect that.
Right. And it cuts to the chase of this fundamental corporate law tension, right?
Right.
On one side, you've got that drive to maximize shareholder value, you know, the Revlon world. But on the other, you've got these firmly established rights that come with holding a big chunk of the company.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So let's lay it all out, like set the scene, right? Who are the players and what went down? We're at Katie Industries, and the Carroll family, they've got about half the company's stock. So they make a move, right? Offer $25.75 a share to take the whole thing private. Sounds like a pretty standard first move, right? Like, controlling shareholder wants to buy out everyone else. Happens all the time.
Yeah, classic scenario.
But then, plot twist, Pensler Capital! They waltz in with a counteroffer, $28 a share. Now, here's the kicker, though. Pensler's offer, it comes with strings attached. They want Katie to issue this, like, stock option that would dilute everyone else's shares. That's where things get messy. You know, everyone's interests, they start to bump right up against each other.
And that dilution, that's a big deal. Basically, the company's saying, we're going to print more stock, give it to Pensler. And what does that do? It shrinks the ownership slice of everyone who already has shares, including, of course, the Carroll family, directly chips away at their control.
For sure. And I bet you can guess how the Carrolls felt about that. Not thrilled. They're not going to just sit back and watch their power get diluted. So they take action. Boost their own stake, end up with more than 50%, boom, control solidified, game on.
So it's like a chess match, right? They see the threat and they shore up their position, make it much harder for Pensler to swoop in and take control.
Yep. So now the Katie board, they're in this pickle.
Right.
They've got a higher offer on the table, but it comes with this dilution thing that the controlling shareholder absolutely hates. In the end, they reject Pensler's stock option. They say they're worried about it being legally iffy, and instead, they propose this special dividend, $14 a share for all the existing shareholders. I mean, that's a pretty different outcome than a $28 buyout, right?
Oh, yeah. Huge difference. That leaves the minority shareholders, you know, the folks without that controlling block, potentially missing out on a lot of money.
Big time. And that's where our guy, Herbert Mendel, the shareholder, he steps in. Files a lawsuit. He's saying the board dropped the ball big time. They breached their duty, he argues, to get the best value for shareholders by saying no to that dilution option. He's basically arguing they shut down Pensler's sweeter offer.
And this is where we hit the core legal question that the Delaware Chancery Court had to figure out.
You know. Exactly. So we've got this whole back and forth, right?
Right.
Offers, counteroffers, power plays. But it boils down to this. Did the board mess up? Given that the Carrolls now have a super solid controlling stake, did the Katie board fail in their duties by rejecting that option that would let Pensler's higher offer go through? This is like the heart of it. It goes right to that tension. When a controller is calling the shots, does the board's duty to grab the highest price for everyone right now trump the controller's right to keep on controlling?
And it forces us to ask, you know, when, if ever, does a board have this obligation to basically dilute a controlling stake just because there's a juicier offer out there from someone else? It's a massive question. Has ripple effects for how deals go down for the whole power structure in the boardroom.
For sure. Okay, so we've got the story. We've got the central dilemma. Now let's dig into what the court actually decided. And, you know, maybe even more importantly, why? What were the big ideas, the legal principles that Chancellor Allen used to reach his decision?
Well, I think the court's decision really hangs on this idea that having a controlling shareholder, it kind of changes the whole game when it comes to fiduciary duties, especially when we're thinking about, you know, that Revlon world. The court basically said, look, Revlon duties, which you know are all about maximizing value when a company's getting sold, they don't just kick in automatically when you have a controller who's not selling. And the core of Revlon is a change in control, right? Which wasn't happening here with the Carol staying in charge.
Yeah, that makes sense. If the person who's already running the show is going to keep running the show, it's not really for sale in that classic Revlon sense, is it?
Nope. And building on that, the court said, boards can't just whip out these corporate tools, you know, like a dilutive stock option, and use them against a controlling shareholder unless they've got like rock solid proof that the controller is doing something shady, some kind of serious breach of their own duty. It's a high bar to clear.
So the board can't just like pull out a move that weakens the controller because someone else came along with a higher price that the controller didn't like?
No, not usually. The court really leaned into this concept of a control premium. This is key. They basically said, look, the Carrolls offered $25.75 a share. That could actually be a totally fair price for the minority shares, even though Pensler's $28 included a premium for, you know, taking over the whole shebang. The court's saying there are different values at play here, right? The value of just owning a little piece versus the value of getting that big controlling block.
So someone who wants to, like, become the boss, they're often going to pay extra for that control. But that doesn't mean a lower offer from the current boss is automatically ripping off the other shareholders.
Right. The court drew this line, right, between what a single share is worth to someone who just owns a few and what it's worth to someone who wants to become the decision maker.
And what about that option itself, the dilution one? Like, what specifically did the court say about whether the board should have okayed it?
Yeah, they were clear about this. They said these options, these things that mess with the ownership structure, you can really only use them if the controlling shareholder is actively taking advantage of the little guys, the minority shareholders. In Mendel, the court didn't see any of that going on with the Carrolls. They were exercising their rights as the majority owners, but they weren't trying to force the minority out at a bad price or acting in bad faith. And a big factor here was that the board themselves, they had their own doubts about whether using that option was even legal in this situation.
So it wasn't just the Carrolls throwing a fit about the dilution. The board itself was like, hold on, is this even kosher?
Exactly. Which points to another big idea the court highlighted, this respect for property rights. Specifically when you own a controlling chunk of a company. They basically said controlling shareholders, they don't have to sell if they don't want to, and they can say no to offers, even high ones, unless what they're doing is just totally outrageous, unconscionable, the court called it, which they didn't think was happening here.
Oh, that's powerful. It's like saying being the majority owner, it comes with these basic rights.
And the court also pointed to some, you know, procedural stuff that kind of backed up the board's decision. The fact that a special committee made up of independent directors, they went back and forth with the Carrolls and got them to bump their offer up from $22 to $25.75. The court liked that. Plus, the board talked to their lawyers who were like, this stock option thing, kind of risky legally.
Mm.
That all reinforced the idea that the board wasn't just, you know, blindly rubber stamping whatever the controlling shareholder wanted. They were thinking it through, weighing their options, being careful.
Doing their homework, right.
Right, doing their due diligence.
Yeah.
And so all of this, all these pieces, they led the court to decide that, hey, the Katie board, they acted reasonably. They didn't violate their duties to the minority shareholders in this particular situation.
Okay, that's a good breakdown of the key holdings in Mendel. Now let's play what if. Let's imagine a different scenario. What if the Carrolls, instead of just saying no to Pensler, they went a step further? They said to the minority shareholders, look, either you sell us your shares at a price way lower than even our original $22 offer, or we're cutting off all future dividends. Like, how does that change things?
Ooh, that's a good one. That really highlights the nuances here. If the Carrolls had pulled something like that, right, straight up threatening to withhold dividends, which are a big deal for minority shareholders, especially in a controlled company, well, that would likely be a huge red flag. That would probably be them breaching their own duties as controlling shareholders. You know, it'd be like they're trying to squeeze the minority out unfairly. And in that kind of situation, the board, they'd have a lot more room to maneuver, maybe even use a dilutive option like we were talking about, kind of like what we see with the InnoCull Senator Review. Wow. The idea there would be to protect the minority from this like strong arm tactic by the controller.
So the key difference in that what if is that element of like forcing people's hand. In the real Mendel case, the Carrolls were basically using their rights as majority owners, right? But they weren't being super aggressive or threatening the minority.
Right. They were making their move, but they weren't crossing the line.
Yeah.
The court in Mendel really emphasized that the Carrolls weren't obligated to sell, and what they did, even if it didn't result in the absolute highest price right away for everyone, it wasn't this like awful, unconscionable move toward the minority.
So for everyone listening, especially those of you deep in corporate law land, what are the big takeaways from Mendel v. Carroll? What are the like must-know things, the principles you got to remember as future lawyers and deal-makers?
So many good lessons here. First off, got to remember, controlling shareholders, they're not legally bound to make sure every single share gets the highest price possible unless they're the ones selling their controlling interest. They have a right to that control premium, which means an offer from them for the minority shares might be lower than some other bid that would change who's in charge, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's a really crucial difference, right? It's easy to miss that.
Absolutely. Second big thing, Revlon, that famous duty to max out shareholder value. It really only comes into play in specific situations when control of the company is actually changing hands. Mendel makes it clear that it doesn't apply just because some outsider wants to buy the company at a higher price if the controller is staying put.
So just because someone walks in with a fat checkbook doesn't mean the board's got to run an auction if the person in control is like, nah, I'm good.
Right. No fire sale just because someone's interested. And the third key takeaway, boards. They need real solid proof that the controlling shareholder is messing up, you know, acting in their own self-interest, pressuring people unfairly, or doing something that hurts the minority shareholders before they can step in and do something big like diluting the controller's stake, especially if they're doing it just to help some outsider buy the company against the controller's wishes. The court sets a high bar for that.
Super important points. So Mendel v. Carroll, it gives us this framework for balancing things, right? On the one hand, you've got these powerful controlling shareholders, and on the other, you've got the need to protect those who only own a small piece. And it does this without forcing the folks in charge to just give up their company because someone else offered more money.
Exactly. It's about respecting those ownership rights while still giving boards a way to step in when things get truly unfair. When a controlling shareholder is clearly acting in bad faith and hurting the minority.
Man, this has been such a good deep dive. Really interesting case, foundational stuff. So as we wrap up our look at Mendel v. Carroll, here's something to think about. How has the legal world, particularly around these fiduciary duties and controlled companies, how has that changed since this 1994 case? What are some of the ways these principles from Mendel might be tested in today's M&A world? We've got cases like MFW, you know, they've added a whole other layer of complexity to all this, though we didn't really get into that today. It just goes to show that corporate law, it's not static, it's evolving. Getting a grip on these landmark cases, it's just the first step in a really fascinating journey. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.